classic.
Internet.
Don't delay.
Debut album.
What is it?
Unbelievable.
Sunny days.
Eartraining.com.
David Lucas Burge Ear Training Library for Musical Excellence. The Relative Pitch Ear Training Super Course. Lesson 1, Part 1. Ladies and gentlemen, David Lucas Burge.
Relative pitch, like perfect pitch, is an aspect of our own musical awareness. It's not something outside of ourselves. Let me show you. If we have a C and a G, now together they form a certain relationship one with another. We call this a perfect fifth. It has a certain sound to it. It's different than if I make a C and a B. It has a different sound to it. Now, really, these sounds are all in our own mind. In a sense, they're a little bit illusory because they don't really exist anywhere except in our own mind, in our own awareness. Because this C is sitting right here, just minding its own business, and the G is sitting here minding its own business. And neither one of them really knows what the other one's doing, but the mind puts them together and produces this sound. And if we go up and down, it has a certain sound to it. If I do the other relationship from the C to the B, it's a different relationship. So relative pitch is really a discovery about how our own mind works, how it interprets the sounds that it hears. Ear training is universal. It doesn't make any difference whether we're rock, classical, jazz, pop, country, oriented, whatever style we play, or whatever instrument we play, whether it's piano, guitar, oboe, violin, synthesizer, it doesn't make any difference. Ear training is the one topic where all musicians can come and sit together and enjoy themselves, because whether we're playing rock or classical or jazz, we're still dealing with the same scale, the same chromatic scale. We all have C, C sharp, D, E flat, E, F. They're all the same tones. A jazz person may put together certain chords a little differently than maybe a classical person would. But they're all the same tones, and we're all dealing with how the ear interprets sound. We all must have the ability, our ears must have the ability to unlock the sounds that it hears. Now, when we say unlock, that means if you have three tones like that, the ear has to have the ability to get inside each one of those sounds. Most people only hear the top note, the C on top. I remember when I was trying out for concert choir at a conservatory that I attended. You may wonder why I even was trying out for concert choir when you hear me sing a little later. But the thing is, I was trying out, and one of the drills that he had everyone do, he played a chord like that, and he said, "Now sing me the middle note," because he was trying to test to see if the ear was open enough to be able to unlock the sound of that chord, to get inside of it and hear the middle tone and to hear the bottom tone. So this is what we mean when we talk about unlocking a chord. The ear should not just hear the top note. If you have a thing like this, everybody hears, but we have to also be able to hear, and then when we can hear them together, the ear is really hearing what it's listening to. Two people can hear the same music, the same song on the radio, the same symphony, but they can hear it completely differently. One person hears very deeply. His ear unlocks all the cores. It understands what's going on. Everything is in focus. The other ear is certainly able to enjoy, but if it doesn't really penetrate deeply into the music, then its appreciation is more limited. If you're a performer, you certainly can only perform as well as your ear can hear. If you're a classical musician and you're playing a fugue, you have to be able to get inside the music to bring out the voices that are inside. We talked about this at the Perfect Pitch seminar. It's the same as when you're a composer. You could be a rock composer, jazz composer. It doesn't make any difference. Your ear can only think up and compose what it can comprehend. And it's the same as when we're listening. You can only enjoy as much as the ear can hear. It's sort of like if you go to a museum and you're looking at all the beautiful classical pieces of art. Maybe there's modern art and there's more classical art like Van Gogh, all the well-known painters. Now, anybody off the street can go in and enjoy that art, the beautiful colors and the beautiful portraits and paintings that these great artists have achieved. But if you study art, if you yourself are an artist and you go in and you can be appreciating the different brush strokes and how the artist worked with light and dark and how he mixed his colors and how he did all these other art techniques, then you can appreciate the art even better. Greater knowledge will give a deeper appreciation and also a greater skill in art itself. It produces more skill, and this is the same in music. When we have a broader musical awareness, it will produce more skill when we are actually performing, when we're actually playing. So because music is a hearing art, everything in music is completely and utterly dependent upon how well the ear hears. There's two kinds of musicians. There's the kind that recognizes the value of ear training, and they go after it and improve their ear and then improve everything they're doing. And there's also the kind that really don't understand the need to improve one's own self. Sometimes we get people that are more intellectual. They take a more intellectual approach, and they will go out and buy a lot of equipment, maybe a special synthesizer or advanced programs or more mixers, different kinds of gizmos, all kinds of things that you can use to improve the state of the art of music. Now, this is very good. All these electronic devices are certainly going to help what you can achieve with music, but no matter what material possessions we own as musicians, it will never make up for what we are as musicians. Our own awareness is going to be the limiting factor. If the awareness is narrow, then the music that we put out, no matter what equipment we have, will not be as great. But if the awareness is broad, the ear hears very deeply, then it increases what our potential is. I was very fortunate to have an incredible teacher, Helen Vinograd, who was very aware of the need for opening up the ear as soon as possible. I remember when I first was going to her and I was playing classical pieces, and I think I was playing Mozart or something, and she said, "Well, you know, it was supposed to be a C sharp there, and you played a C natural. Didn't you hear that?" And I said, "No, I didn't hear that." And then a little while later, she said the same thing. She said, "No, you did it again. You played C natural. It should have been C sharp." And I said, "Oh." But she goes, "Didn't you hear that? Didn't it sound wrong to your ear?" And I said, "No, I really didn't notice it." She told me that you really do have a good ear, but it's just closed. It needs to be opened. It's sort of sleeping. So she very promptly sent me off to the local music school, and she said that they would do ear training exercises and that would open up the ear. And of course it did. It's a wonderful thing to do simultaneously to taking music lessons or practicing music, even if you don't take music lessons, just to do ear training. Ear training is really like plowing the field. If you have a field and you want to grow certain crops in it, it doesn't make any difference if you're going to grow tomatoes or corn or soybeans. Same thing. It doesn't make any difference if you're going to grow rock music, jazz music, classical music. You have to plow that field. Now, gaining knowledge about music is like removing the rocks from the field. Gaining relative pitch is like plowing the field. And gaining perfect pitch is like fertilizing the field. Now, you can try to make music without doing anything to the field, but things will not grow if it's rocky. It will not grow as well if it's not plowed. It won't grow as well if it's not fertilized. We need to do all these three things. Buying equipment, extra real expensive equipment, which can do a lot of things, is like getting a bigger field. Certainly with more equipment, you can do more things. It's a bigger field, but still we have to plow it. Then we can do anything in music. There's just no limit. These are the two sides of the coin, perfect pitch and relative pitch. They're completely different levels of awareness. See, this might be an unusual concept, a new concept to a lot of musicians, but the ear has many levels of awareness. It's not that we just hear on one level. On the surface level, we have relative pitch, and at a deeper level, we have absolute pitch. It's not that you either have one or the other. We should have both perfect pitch and relative pitch. Now, perfect pitch, or absolute pitch, deals with color. We have 12 tones in the chromatic scale. Chromatic means colored. And perfect pitch is becoming sensitive to the colors of the pitches. When you can hear the colors clearly, then if I play this note, you hear that it's the color of a C sharp, you know it's a C sharp right away. Now, relative pitch is completely different. Relative pitch is the awareness of space between notes. We call these intervals, the distances between notes, how one note relates to another. Relative means relate. Once again, it's an illusion. There is no space between notes. If I go from here to here, there's no space. It just sounds like there's a space. So relative pitch is the awareness of the distances between notes. It's a very different kind of awareness. Relative means changing level of awareness. When we're playing music, the intervals, the distances change. They just always change. That's how music flows, in change. Whereas absolute pitch, absolute means non-changing. The colors of the pitches always remain the same. Here I have an F sharp. That has a certain color sound to it. And those of you who have already had the perfect pitch course will know what we're talking about. Every time you're playing a piece and you hit that F sharp, it's the same sound, same sound. The B flat always sounds the same. They don't change. The intervals change, but the colors do not. We're recording these tapes at beautiful Grand Lake, Michigan, and I'd like to use that lake as an example to illustrate what we're talking about. If you have on the surface of the lake waves, now the waves change, they go all around. The lake doesn't move. See, it just appears to have motion because the waves are moving. It's the same way with relative pitch. The notes don't really move, but they just appear to flow one after another because of this so-called illusion that we have. It sounds like things are going up. Nothing's going up. We're just playing individual notes, but it sounds that way. Now, this is relative pitch, the waves on the surface. Now, at a deeper level of perception, perhaps we can say that absolute pitch is like the different colors of rocks at the bottom of the lake. We have a green rock, a brown rock, a red rock, an orange rock. Now, those rocks will color the water, but they do not change. No matter what waves flow above them, the colors of the rocks do not change. They're different levels. Absolute pitch is a deep level. Relative pitch is on the surface level of perception. Now, this is why we said that to develop absolute pitch, we have to expand our awareness. Most ears don't hear these colors very clearly. So we have to open up the ear so it begins to hear these very subtle sound colors. And then we develop perfect pitch. Any note we hear, we can name what it is. Now, relative pitch is a focus of musical awareness. We don't expand the ear, we focus it. If we have a note here and a note here, we focus to see what the distance is, and then we learn to label that distance. It's a focus of awareness. Now, remember when we used that analogy with the television set? We said that if you don't have even relative pitch, it's like watching a black and white TV that's out of focus. See, relative pitch, we said, is a focus of awareness. So we have to focus that TV so we have a sharp picture. With relative pitch, we can enjoy the music. If you're listening to music and you don't have relative pitch, you hear all these chords that are going on everywhere, but we don't really know what's going on. We just have a blurred effect of what's going on. Relative pitch is the focusing so that we can hear very clearly what is going on in the music. And then if we also add absolute pitch, then we hear the colors very clearly. Now, some people who come to the Perfect Pitch Seminar wonder if relative pitch is all that we need, or if absolute pitch is all that we need. Some people say, well, one or the other is all you need. And some people, after they've heard the Perfect Pitch Seminar, then they say, well, all I want is perfect pitch. But really, the ear needs both. They both have their own ranges, their own territory, so to speak, and neither one of them can infringe on the other's territory. Command over musical pitches comes when we master their sound. Now, when we master the sound with perfect pitch, we have the colors in our awareness. We have mastered the sound of the colors. We gain certain proficiencies. When we master the sound of the relationships, that's the intervals, then we gain another set of proficiencies. They're both necessary. When we have gained command over musical pitches with perfect pitch and relative pitch, playing by ear and improvisational skills, they're advanced light years. When we want to take music off of records, we've got music inside our own head we want to put on paper. That's vastly accelerated because your ear has already done the work for you. You don't have to sit and fish around for it all. You have a constant head start over anyone who has to play them first in order to find out their sounds. When you want to play by ear, you know what they already sound like, the intervals and the notes. Singing becomes more precise when you can compute any pitch or any interval from memory at any time. We said in the Perfect Pitch Seminar that the ear is really four times as powerful when it has both perfect pitch and relative pitch as with either one of them separately. It can guide the performance with greater confidence. They're both necessary. Relative pitch, we should make a definition of it. Relative pitch equals the mind's understanding of what the ear hears. This is very important. This is going to be a stricter definition than what a lot of schools may define it. Relative pitch is the mind's understanding of what the ear hears. That means that if we have a space like this, we have to be able to know that that is called a major sixth. And in addition, if I tell you this is an E flat, you have to be able to tell me that this top one is a C. It's part intellectual and it's part perceptual. Relative pitch is more intellectual for this reason. It has to do with the mind and musicianship. Relative pitch is the level of musicianship, being able to have command over intervals. Perfect pitch is different. Perfect pitch is more to do with the heart than with the intellect, because when you hear the colors of the tones, it's not an intellectual experience. As a matter of fact, one of the common problems that I face regularly with students is they try to intellectualize the experience of absolute pitch and then they can't hear it. So we have to get rid of the intellect when we're using perfect pitch. But relative pitch, we do use the intellect. Perfect pitch is the level of the heart, feeling these very subtle sound qualities, and that is the level of the artist, color. This is all having to do with perfect pitch, the level of the musical artist dealing with colors. Relative pitch is the level of the mind dealing with musicality. They're both important because, the reason they're both important is because what's the difference between noise and music? Music has heartfelt intelligence. You can just play anything on the piano. This is noise. It's not music. But when there is some kind of pattern to it, then there's heartfelt intelligence. There's intelligence to it, but it affects the heart. So when these two are together, that's when the ear is at its most powerful. Relative pitch gives the focus of the picture, that TV set. If you don't have relative pitch and you have perfect pitch, it's like having a color TV set, but it's not in focus. You can see the colors, but the picture isn't clear. See, when you have relative pitch, you're listening to the music and all the chords and how they relate. It's clear. It makes sense to the ear. Let me show you what I mean here. We can have two different notes. Let's take a C and an E. Now, together, they make a certain sound. They have certain colors to them. With absolute pitch, the C has one color, the E has a different color. Now, I'm going to take those two notes and I'm going to change them. I'm going to put one above the other. I'm going to put the E on the bottom and the C on the top. Now, look, they're the same notes, but now the sound has changed. Here's the first way. Second way. You see, they're the same colors as far as perfect pitch is concerned, but they're different sounds as far as relative pitch is concerned. This is why relative pitch is always necessary. Perfect pitch will never make up for not having relative pitch. Let me show you a magic trick here. If I have a musical scale, whoops. Now if I just stop there, what happens? What does your ear want to do? Relative pitch tells you that it just wants to somehow go to there. If I stay here, it doesn't sound like it's quite resolved, unless you're a jazz musician. Maybe if you're a jazz musician, you'll actually enjoy keeping it there. But there's something that makes it want to go up to the next note. Now watch what happens if I do this. Here's the magic. Now, we've just played a few chords, and now I'll play the same B. Does it sound like it wants to move anywhere? No. It's right at home where it is. Before, it wanted to move. Now, why is this? It all has to do with relative pitch. If you put the B with certain tones, it gives it energy. If you put the B with other tones, it makes it stable and makes it want to stay put right where it is. Perfect pitch will not give you this. All perfect pitch does is it tells you the color of the tone so that you know it's a B. Feeling the relationships is a completely different experience, and that's why both are necessary. Now let me show you something else. Which would you say is the most relaxed chord? This chord or this chord? Obviously, the second one has a more relaxed feeling. Why? Because of the way the relationships are built on top of one another. Now, if you want to make some kind of spacey music, it has to do with space, would you pick something like this? Or this? The second one, which is sort of spacey. It all depends on what scales you're using. This all has to do with relative pitch, and we're going to learn all these things, all about these different kinds of chords. If you're going to make a movie score and you want it to be very suspenseful in a particular spot, would you choose this set of notes? Or would you choose this set of notes? See, it all has to do with how the notes relate to one another. If you had to pick a sound that was going to sound modern, like a computer or something, would you pick something like this? Or would you pick something like this? The second one, because it just is a different style of playing than what the classical musicians use. It's a different kind of structuring the sounds than what Bach or Mozart would use, a more modern kind of a sound. We could have, for instance, a chord like this. Now, it's built up of individual tones, D, F sharp, A, C, E. And this is what we know with absolute pitch, what the actual tones are. But with relative pitch, we are aware of the actual architecture of that chord. It's a dominant ninth chord, and we're going to learn all these chords, dominant seven chord, augmented chords, major, minor, diminished, all those chords we're going to learn in this course. as well as all the individual intervals that go to compose those chords. So perfect pitch gives the individual building blocks, the colors of the notes. Relative pitch gives the architecture of the chords themselves. One cannot replace the other. They're both necessary aspects of musical awareness. These are the two sides of the coin. And when you have them both in your awareness, there's just vast horizons which are waiting to be experienced. And in this course, we're going to focus on relative pitch. We're going to establish relative pitch. We have to culture it. We have to listen. Now, there's nothing in the ear that we have to construct. Everything is already there. All we have to do is use our ear and bring out the qualities which are just lying there latently. Now, there's a second thing we have to do besides listening when we're concerned with relative pitch. Because remember, we said that relative pitch is the mind's understanding of what the ear hears. So therefore, we have to also use our intellect. We have to learn the correct intervals from one tone to another. It's just going to be like learning 2 times 2 is 4, 8 times 8 is 64. It's going to be just like that. Part of it's going to be listening, and part of it is going to be learning these times tables. Now, in this course, it's completely different than any other kind of course, because all we're going to focus on is relative pitch so that we learn it thoroughly. We're not going to talk about rhythms. We're not going to read music. You don't even have to read music to do this course. All you need for this course is just your ears. You will learn it so thoroughly without taking notes and studying them. We're going to cover points over and over until it's part of you. Even if you have never had any experience in music, you will be able to very quickly pick up these musical calisthenics and learn to hear these things. It's a lot of fun. It will give you a great sense of achievement. As the achievement grows, a very rich perception will also grow. I used to have to laugh. I mentioned this in the seminar as well, that people are often afraid of ear training. They used to call it ear straining when I was taking classes in college, and people also call it fear training. But see, it shouldn't be that way. There is only one reason why this has happened. This is what happens here. People in a school, they're taught intervals, like maybe this is a perfect fourth, this is a perfect fifth, and then they get tested on it. Now, some of them will get A's, and they'll go on and learn more things, and they get another A, and they go on and learn. But see, most of the people will get maybe a B or a C. That means they have not thoroughly learned that material. Now, if you keep adding newer and newer material, and you haven't thoroughly learned the old material, then it's going to be a constant source of frustration. You have to thoroughly learn the old before you go on with the new. In this particular course, we only have 2 grades. If you pass the test, then you go on. If you don't pass the test, you just go back and redo it. It's a lot of fun. We take the tapes at our own pace, whatever is comfortable for us. One of the things we'll be learning is we just have to listen easily, but we have to get beyond the threshold of it. Too many people just go part way. They learn a lot of their intervals. Maybe they learn the up intervals. They don't learn the descending intervals. And forever they're sitting there thinking in their head, what is that interval? Finally, in the end, when we graduate this course, we will have established relative pitch. We don't have to refer to anything outside. We own that awareness inside of ourselves. And then all the practical benefits are just yours. You own them. Now, are there any questions?
Is this course for advanced musicians as well as beginners?
Oh, yes, very definitely. What we're emphasizing very strongly is this speed recognition of tones, to be able to hear tones and immediately, without thinking much about it, hear how they stack up, to be able to get in there and focus those tones to get that clear picture. See, many musicians who have a good degree of relative pitch lack this speed recognition of tones. So what we want to do for the advanced musicians is to start over and step by step rebuild the ear. So any little weaknesses that are in there, they get all smoothed out, and we give this speed recognition. It's a highly refined style of listening. So I definitely had in mind when doing this course that the newest beginner would be listening as well as the advanced musicians. Because even the advanced musicians do basic drills and exercises for the ear. which keep it tuned up and in shape. And it's very important to keep that ear in shape because that's what guides the performance.
Do you need any previous musical training to take this course?
No, none whatsoever, because the entire course is just the art of effortless listening. We just listen effortlessly to all the drills, and then the ear training just naturally occurs. So we don't need to have any kind of training beforehand.
Will relative pitch help me to develop perfect pitch?
Yes, it will, because the ear will not penetrate deeply to hear absolute pitch color unless it's at least to some extent cultured. If the ear is completely raw, it will not hear the absolute pitch colors as easily. So you could take the relative pitch course, and then after that, the perfect pitch will just fall right into place. But for others of you who are more cultured with your ear, they could both be done simultaneously. Maybe do the perfect pitch in the morning and the relative pitch in the evening. There will be a vast difference in your hearing from the way your ear hears now to when you graduate after the last tape. A completely permanent change will occur in your awareness. So now it's time to take your mark, get set, and let's go learn how to open up our ears. And remember, music will take you as far as your ear can hear.
This concludes part one of Relative Pitch, lesson number one. As a reminder, David Lucas suggests that you now take a break and continue with part two, fresh, tomorrow.